recent months, a meeting would be a good idea. But he refused to see Braun alone, arguing it would just turn into another personality conflict. Accounts of the ill-fated dinner spread rapidly through the ranks at ABC. Susan Lynn and others worried that things had blown up so quickly that Braun hadn't been able to get his message across. Lynn was so worried Braun would be fired that she went to see Iger that Friday. She spent 2 hours with him, trying in a measured and calm way to underscore how important Braun was to the network and how much he did to boost morale. At the same time, she was candid in her assessment of Iger. Echoing sentiments that were widespread at ABC, she told him that his presence at the network had become a dark cloud because he always seemed negative, and that he kept demanding that they fix things while conveying skepticism that they could. The Bob Iger who hired me, who got me to ABC, who was trained and guided by Tom Murphy, is gone, she said, her tone one of sadness more than criticism. It was a sobering message. Iger looked anguished and finally said, "You don't know how hard it is to do the job that I have. Working for Michael is very different from working for Tom." Over the weekend, Eisner sent another email to both Braun and Iger. "Can we all please just take a deep breath and calm down?" he wrote. And then, on Monday, Iger struck a conciliatory note, acknowledging that it was healthy to discuss their differences, and joking that he'd ruined his tie. Braun went to the Giorgio Armani boutique in Beverly Hills, picked out a tie, and sent it to Iger with a note. "A fresh start requires a new tie." Braun and Iger had lunch the next day. The tone was civil, conciliatory. They agreed to try to work together. That weekend, Eisner invited Braun to meet him at his home. "How did it get to this point?" Eisner asked, referring to Braun's relationship with Iger. "It's not productive at this time to get into it," Braun replied. "I dealt with this with Bob. I didn't run to you. It got horrible, but let's just leave it at that." Eisner pressed him for more details, but Braun held fast. He didn't want to get between Iger and Eisner. The next week, Iger told Braun that Eisner had told him about the meeting. "He said you wouldn't trash me," Iger reported. Part 3. Disney War. 16. On November 20, 2003, a week before Thanksgiving, Roy Disney met with John Bryson at the bar in Pasadena, where Bryson broke the news that Roy would not be re-nominated to the Disney board. After Roy abruptly ended the discussion and walked out, Bryson called Eisner. "Roy seemed shocked," he reported. "Roy said it was like we stuck a knife in his heart." Eisner felt uneasy. This didn't sound good. He wondered if Bryson had been the right person to handle this. Had he been too blunt? If Eisner had been the one to deliver the news, he would have soft-pedaled it a little, left some air in the situation, maybe given his famous elastic no. "I think we've got a problem here," Eisner said. "I'd say we tested the water, and the water is cold." "Yeah," Bryson agreed. He said he had told Roy that he would discuss the matter with the committee and get back to him. After the call, Eisner spoke to public relations.